Bert Howard, Real 8. So, although you've been pulled into reserve, were you still subjected to Japanese shellfire and mortar fire at this period?
Yeah, we were. So we could have been, but we never. I think we might have had the odd one or two, but we weren't. We weren't actually confined to trenches like you were on D'Arce Ridge. You were able to move around a little bit more. As I said to you, I went and saw some of the lokes in the trenches, the sick and what have you. But you had a little bit more movement. But again, I can't recollect what we'd done regards to rations or whatever. We must have got something. But where we got it from, I can't remember. It must have been D Company, I should think. But again, after being in the D'Arce Ridge for 3 or 4 days, and then we couldn't have been in the reserve period for very long before we came out. So, otherwise, I think if we'd have been there too long, we might have been down with A Company on the tennis courts, because they were in a bit of a mess at one time.
How had the terrain around Kohima changed in the time that you were in the siege?
Well, if there was any trees here, it was stubs, you know, with the shell and what have you. And it was more or less open country by the time we'd finished. For the people who were relieved us, I would think they had their most difficult time, really. More difficult, as much as what we had, if not more, because they were doing frontal attacks. Whereas we were stationary, we were able to pick our targets if we had a chance to. The actual terrain, it was still a hill with a road round it, but the trees are gone. A few crosses on the ground where the bodies were able to be buried were buried. But, and of course there was quite a few bodies lying around which were bloated. But there was no change in the terrain at all. But eventually I think these two Indian platoons were able to get in overnight, and that was the first start of our relief. And we were able to get some of the casualties down to the ambulances. And I'm not certain, but I think it was Royal Berkshire was the first people I saw come up to us, and was I pleased to see them. And eventually they moved through us, and then we were told to withdraw down to the road where the trucks were, where these ambulances were, around the corner of some trucks, and we were embodied on these trucks and taken back down. We went past brigade headquarters and stopped, because that had all been cleared then, and I think they gave us a cup of tea or something there from the side of the road. And we went down to Dimapur, and again at Dimapur I'm not too certain what happened, because I had malaria.
Before you do that, could I just ask, with the Royal Berkshires arriving, what was the reaction to seeing you people who'd been in the siege for those 14 days?
Well, with them, I don't know about their reactions. I know ours was funny, really gave us hope and what have you. But with them, I would think they might have been a bit apprehensive of what they're going to do, because the Japs were still there.
Did you try and give them any advice as to what to do there?
We wanted to get out, and that was it. Obviously, the company commanders must have done. They must have handed over where, the battalion commander must have told the officers where everything was. I mean, you wouldn't just walk onto a place. You'd find out where the Japs were and what have you. No, I would think they would be most apprehensive. Although there's no gunfire at that particular time, and we were able to embus quite easily. It was only when they put them casualties, onto the ambulance when they shelled, whether they'd moved the guns from there, I don't really know, but they never did hit us.
Had there been a slackening in the Japanese action at that point, do you think?
I would think so, yeah. It must have been, because, I mean, the marches, I remember them coming up the side from the same place as where the ambulance had been, so coming up the side to us. I mean, they were in the open, and we went down in the open, so it must have been, I must have cleared them off from around the corners.
And you say that you'd come down with malaria during that period?
Oh, yeah. We went back into Dimapur, and I no sooner got down there, and I was in the hospital at Dimapur with malaria, along with others as well. And I don't really know what happened in Dimapur over the next week or two, because I was in there, and that's where I met Dame Vera Lynn. She came and sang in that hospital so soon after. In actual fact, she went up to brigade headquarters where they were cut off, and she sang up there. But I saw Vera Lynn in the hospital singing in Dimapur.
Can you remember what she was singing?
All the White Cliffs of Dover and that sort of thing, yeah. Really, really good. In her uniform, yes, yeah.
So apart from the malaria, what physical condition were you in?
Weak, I should think. Lost a lot of weight. And the rest in the hospital done me good.
You'd not been wounded anyway at all at Kohima?
No. In actual fact, the only wound I got throughout my war period was on the way down. I told you early on we had a new Piat gun came out, fired from the shoulder. I had to go on a demonstration to that, and the base ring of the bomb flew back and hit me in the shoulder, and that's the only wound I got. It's from our own bloody demonstration. But so I was lucky, really lucky.
So what happened after Dimapur?
Eventually we were recalled back up to Kohima, and although the British 2nd Division and that had done most of the clearing, we were taken into the sort of Kohima box area, and we were more or less in reserve. But then we were allocated different things, we went out to the left, I remember, of Kohima, we went down this track, and we were due to cut the road further down, and it was a track, and it was monsoon, wet and what have you, and we ran up against, not particularly my company, but the battalion run up against one or two Japs, and we got held up for a day or two. So consequently, by the time we got round, the main force had gone down the road, and we never really got involved in, but we just had to do this left-hand hook to try and get behind the Japs again. And funny enough, soon after that, they had a mobile shower place. You know, we were able to, they had this fixed up so that we could have a real good shower and that. But I shouldn't remember that shower. But then again, the same thing happened further down. We went out to the right and to come in. And this more or less happened all the way down. And it appeared that the Japs probably got two or three people, which they'd done in the Arakan, really. Just had a few people round a certain spot, enough to hold you up for one or two days. And then by the time you've gone round the back and sent a patrol in, they've gone. So although we'd done all that work, we never actually got too many casualties through gunfire, you know. And again, we weren't harassed at all with any big stuff, which was a good thing, really. Probably a machine gun now and again, but although I say that, I never actually got involved in that. Being company sergeant major, I was always just that little bit behind with the mules or whatever.
What would you do on your daily routine with the mules at this stage?
Well, the muleteers were responsible for that. But orders would come out probably, not particularly at this time, but during the course of the war, they would change the loads of the mules. Like, at one time, our packs used to come on the mule, but then they decided that it was more important that we carried our packs and blankets. There's one per man, or ammunition was the main thing. So the mules was used for that type of thing we carried around. And it was getting the actual loads organised that I was was used, really. I had to make certain that the blankets were on so many in a roll, 10 in a roll, I think it was at the time, so that they were balanced on the roll.
Would the blankets have any waterproof covering as well? Obviously, you were operating the monsoon.
Yeah, I can't remember, but I would obviously, I'd probably wrap a couple of ground sheets around them. Obviously, the blankets and that. There were no plastic those days.
Because am I right in thinking that this is the first time you were actually operating through the monsoon?
No, in the Arakan it was a bit wet, but it wasn't nothing like at that stage.
Because with you advancing forward on these flanking movements, what type of progress would you make each day?
Not very much. I remember, this is a little bit further on, because the same sort of thing happened after we got down to Kaliwa, I think it was, and then we were flown out to Infal. And then we went from Infal up the Chocolate Staircase, and we were doing exactly the same thing up there. And you'd go down the side of these hills, with your mules, they would slip off and whatever. You'd get drenched, and we'd go round and perhaps harbour up for the night and then proceed on, or we'd have an airdrop. This is in up the Chocolate Staircase, whatever you call it. But and we'd have an airdrop. And the actual, you said progress, it was slow because it was so muddy, and if you got a mule over the top of the, you slipped off the top, you'd try and get them back, you unload the mule and get them back up onto the track and load them up again, away you go. But it wasn't, I mean, you were probably had 2 days to get round to break the road further up. And you'd probably do it in that time. We didn't seem to get held up with any enemy. It was the weather really that held us up at all. I mean, you'd come to a chong, or you know, where the water was really rushing, and you had to get across that. Again, I was sort of with C Company, perhaps in the rear of the battalion. Well, by the time we got to the chong, it had been organised, and we were straight across. But no, on the whole, we never got held up with the weather above. That it was a struggle.
Would you operate in a long column on these tracks?
Yeah, you always follow the leader. I mean, because of the situation, the hills going down, all you got is a track. So you'd go down to the chong and across and up the other side, round the back, and then you'd come to a little plain with one or two huts and what have you, and that's where they had organised an airdrop, because it was a flat area. We had one airdrop there, but mainly, we were on hard rations really, so the airdrop was mainly, if we wanted ammunition or, well, it wasn't personal things that you got dropped from the air. Yeah, it was cookery, rations. But again, they were rations that are hard. They come in square tin. And you've got your biscuits and what have you. And I remember a little bit later on when we were flying out, a meal I had was dehydrated cauliflower and sardines all mixed up. The old cook had warmed it all up, and yeah, that was really good. You wouldn't think so, but it was, that's all they had. And we were on these hard rations, like biscuits, and we never touched our square tins, like this chocolate. I don't know if you know, but they were sort of like a block of chocolate in a tin. Well, we never used to have to touch that until it was really emergency. But we had these other biscuits and that. But now, getting back to what we you said about the holding up, we never seemed to get held up in accordance with the people who were going down the main road. It seemed that the chaps stayed just long enough to hold everybody up, and then they were out. And I would imagine that there's only a matter of, 10 or a dozen chaps could hold you up. Because I remember one stage, they'd got a bunker on the end of this. We was going along the top of this little hill, and they'd had a bunker at the end with perhaps half a dozen boats and machine gun in. Not C Company, but the forward troops got held up with this, and we had to do another little turn round the back. And of course, time we got round the back. Not necessarily C Company, but we took it in turns, D Company, what have you done, these things. And the time we got round the back, they just filtered out. Unfortunately, because of that, our casualties weren't all that great.
What was the morale in the battalion like, obviously, as you were advancing?
Well, morale. It wasn't too bad, really, I don't think. We're a bit fed up with the ruddy weather. But they all seemed to think that there was job to be done, I suppose. And when the old mules went off the side, if a mule slipped down the side, the people that just helped them up, you know, the RSM, you know, down there, unloading the mules. I think seeing the situation we were in, I think the morale was quite reasonable.
When the mules went off the side of the track, did you ever have a problem with one that had injured itself beyond help?
Oh, yeah. Odd occasion, not very often. Most times we were able to get them back on the track.
What would happen if they had injured themselves?
I think the RSM actually at one time had to kill one mule. But the muleteers and that, they were so attached to the animals. You know, it's amazing, really, to see that they were in peacetime or in their civvy life. I don't know whether they had anything really to do with animals, but they were allocated a job with these mules, and they really took to it. Amazing.
What are mules like? Because obviously they're considered stubborn, but are they stubborn?
They are stubborn, but I think, on the whole, they're more of a follower than the leader. If you've got a good one leading, the rest will follow. We harboured up one night, and I had the mules and the cookhouse and what have you in my little area. And we had the mules there all night, and they were just tethered up. And we had no trouble, you know. You'd hear them bay now and again, but they just stood there and took it all for granted. They had their old nose bags on, feeding us. But the mules were there, a godsend, really, on that, especially from Dimmer. Once we went up to Kohima again, down to Kaliwa, the mules were one of the things that we were relied on, and of course up the Tidim Road was more so, because they couldn't get the supplies up from it was only sort of jeeps and what have you.
With the mules, were there any precautions you took, obviously, when they were harbouring at night and you had your little area that you were controlling?
Well, no. Going back to this particular time, it was when the bloke run off the came down, one of the other company men came down. He'd come away from his company and came down to where we were, and I said, "What are you doing? What have you?" And he said, "Oh, I've had enough of it," sort of thing. And I said, "I don't know where you're going, but the best thing you can do is stop with us here." So I kept him there and took him back in the morning. But we never dug trenches or anything, because you're only there for the night. And what we used to do, we used to organise the sleeping arrangements. If it was a bit wet or anything, we lashed the ground sheets together. We made a sort of a tent of ground sheets. And then we slept in a row, for five or six of you in a row. And then you all took turns in sentry. I done my 2 hours, and you wake the bloke up next, take his place. And we just had two people awake around the area, just to warn us if anything was around. If you realise that the Japs were going away from us, and the only thing you were likely to get was one or two sort of left behind people that would come in, and they might fire at you, but they would cause a disturbance perhaps. But it never happened to me, thank goodness. And during that period, as I say, the mules were in amongst everybody else, and we just had a couple of sentries to make certain that we were all right.
Were the mules ever affected by gunfire or explosions?
Well, they were to a certain, but no. Again, we were travelling down these tracks and what have you, and it wasn't very often when we were under fire. As I said just now, artillery, we never had any shelling or anything like that. If anything, it might be the odd rifle fire, but with our mules, we done quite well.
So you moved down from Kohima. Where did you go from there as you were doing these flanking movements? Did you head down towards Kaliwa, or was it towards Imphal?
Going down towards Imphal was here. And that's right. Because we went down from Kohima. We done all these things down towards Imphal. And at Imphal, eventually we met up with Imphal people. I'm saying we, the division or the brigade, I mean we not necessarily us, met people coming up. But we were eventually got to Imphal, and then we were reorganised. Of course, Imphal had tanks and what have you there, and I saw one or two tank battles in the distance. But we were then, and I don't know if it was the 5th Division, but or just 2 brigades. But anyway, our division was involved with this chocolate staircase and up to what's the name of the peak? Anyway,
Kennedy Peak.
Kennedy Peak, yeah, that's right. And on the way up there, we were doing all this right and left, milestone 80, milestone 90, milestone 100, whatever. As soon as they met a couple of Japs or whatever, it was round the back. In the morning, they're gone. And that happened more or less all the way. And eventually, we went up Kennedy Peak. And that was the highest, I think that was the highest point in that Tidim Road. And eventually we went down the other side. And our forward troops met up with the West Africans.